Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, smart brand marketers. With me, I have the one and only Louise Hendon. She is the CEO of Nourishing Brands. Say hi, Louise.
Hey, Tom. Hey, everyone.
I like that. It's almost like at the AA meeting. Like, what's your name?
Yeah, speak up.
I'm Tom. Right. Do you have a problem? Yeah, I'm a marketer.
I have a severe problem. All I talk about is marketing.
All I talk about is marketing. I'm pissing off the family and all my friends. But that's true, right? Like, paleo people or vegans, that's like really the one topic, right? Or crypto.
Oh, crypto. Yeah, it seems like if you go to a marketing meetup these days, it's all about crypto. And if you go to a health meetup, it's all about keto. So
that's funny. It's,
everything just follows trends.
Are you in ketosis right now?
Today, probably not.
That's very scientific of you. Probably not.
I know. I did not measure this morning, but I have not had any breakfast, and it's already afternoon time, so who knows?
That is true. Well, the reason I brought you on is because you're killing it in content marketing. And I know everyone's always interested in getting free traffic from Google. And, you know, the traffic and conversions meetup that I went to, or was it like the one of the speakers, he just said, write good content. You know, like he said, I'm going to give you a secret. Then he said, write good content. And I was like, what the fuck again? Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
It doesn't help at all. And then you told me you need about 100 longer articles.
To get started, so I guess I would classify, you know, we're talking about website content, not podcast content or YouTube content.
Right.
And in terms of, you know, getting your website to rank and be authoritative, you do need, typically, in a larger niche, you need more articles, and that's more just for Google to recognize you as being authoritative. I mean, I guess to me, it's like, what's your goal? And for me, the goal has been to get our websites known for that, not just to be able to get free traffic, but to get long-lasting free traffic.
Yeah, the thing about a lot of content, like before when I had the local SEO website, I had Filipinos cranking out content, right? The quality part, you know, we can question that. I question it a lot. But we had a lot of it, right? And although Google did notice it, we didn't really rank for anything until I went crazy with the SEO on the website, right? So the backlinks were the reason we ranked. I don't think we would have ranked because of the content. And then I seen your content that you showed me. And the only difference I found was that you had more subheadings, you had videos and images, better font, easier to read, and the readability was much better, right? So, you know how they give the score of readability? I think yours was quite good. But the content itself, like, it didn't blow me away. So there's got to be a method to this madness.
Well, can I step back 1 second and just say, like,
step
it depends
back 2 seconds,
on. Well, to me, it seems to depend on why you want that free traffic. And for me, we don't sell anything on the front end of our website. It's not ads driven. It is all, you know, selling through the email. So it's about building that trust and building that reputation. So having said that, just getting people to the site is not my goal. I have to get people to my site, engage with the articles, then opt in, and then I might make some money. So it's a slightly longer game plan. And because of that, I need the articles not only to rank in Google, but when people to actually land on the articles, to actually consume the articles, read it, watch the videos, pin the images to Pinterest. So I need them to do things and take action. Does that make a little more sense?
It does make sense. So with a lot of businesses, and like with my SEO one, the whole purpose was to get eyeballs of business people interested in SEO on the website, and then we try to funnel them in. Now, I know it's a similar process, but I remember what you told me before. When you go over old articles, the one thing you fix is the copy. I think it was in the intro or the outro, right? Which is something we do with the books a lot, the ones that we publish. We always make sure the chapters have really good copy on the intro and outro before, you know, the chapters end, so that people continue reading. And that made a lot of sense to me. So I thought, okay, longer article that answers the right questions with a lot of multimedia and good copy in the front and back.
Yes. So again, like my goal is to have people stay. I mean, okay, so let's break it down into for Google purposes. So for SEO purposes, to rank higher and get more traffic free from Google, I try to do all the smart things SEO people would want to do, you know, make it more readable, make people stay on the page for longer, you know, make it clear to Google what I'm trying to do, like what the article is about, so that it knows to rank me for those key terms. So that's where the video plays in. That's where the better copy plays in, so that I get lower bounce rates.
Yeah, that does make sense.
And so that initial bit of copy is super important, because so many people bounce. I mean, a lot of our websites are very recipe heavy, and people will come to your site and bounce if they think it's not the right recipe somehow. You know, maybe it's just your image doesn't look quite right to them, or five of the ingredients, you know, sound odd to them, or whatever. And so we have to try really hard to decrease bounce rates. And one of the ways you can do that is by writing better intro copy. I'm not saying ours is amazing yet, but that is something I'm really actively trying to work on and trying to systematize better.
Okay, so if someone's listening right now and they're thinking, what does better intro copy sound like? What do you think of when you write that? So let's say someone goes in and they want like a paleo cheesecake recipe. Like, what would make the copy better in the intro than someone just saying like, here's a recipe of paleo cheesecake?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And to me, it's understanding what is that person thinking when they land on that page, when they're searching for that. So they search for paleo cheesecake. They clearly want the recipe, but they want the recipe from someone they trust. They don't want to just go, you know, find something from all recipes. They want to know that it's 100% paleo, because they clearly put in that search term. And they want something that's really delicious, because they're searching for cheesecake. And they want you to tell them that this is going to be the case, and to believe that you are correct on this before they go spend all that money, buy the ingredients, and make the recipe. So that intro has to convey that trust, that you are an authority, that you are someone they should believe in when you say this is the best cheesecake, paleo cheesecake recipe out there. And that often requires a little bit more personal touch than a lot of the bigger websites give. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And just for the listeners, one of the first copywriters that I've heard mention this was Robert Collier. One of the gold nuggets out of most of his books is that you're doing exactly what you just said. You have to get in a conversation in the person's head and then direct them to where you want them to. So it seems like you've really nailed that part down. And I think maybe you could share some places where you learned your copy, or who to look to, so that, you know, the listeners can go in and be like, oh, okay, that's kind of who to mimic.
So if I'm writing specific copy, I still actually love Gary Halbert. I mean, partially because he's got so many that you could just keep on reading forever and ever,
right,
and never even have to read the same thing twice. And everything's so engaging. The other thing I loved when I was starting out was actually listening to, I think it's called I Love Marketing, the podcast.
Right.
And again, they've just got hundreds of episodes of amazing stuff. A lot of the things are just said over and over, but yet, you know, you just keep listening to it and it eventually sinks in, even if you're not taking that much action. Otherwise, I do look around and research other people in my niche a lot. So I see what's doing well, what isn't, and then I try testing it.
Yeah, let's go into that. So how do you figure out what's doing well, what's not, and then how do you choose what you test?
So for start, I would look at people who are, you know, what I would consider crushing it in your industry. So bigger websites, but people that you might know in the industry that are actually doing well. So I think that's one of the hardest things to gauge initially. But once you get to know people within your niche better, you have a better idea of who's actually doing well and who just looks like they're doing well. And then it's actually just having a conversation. I think most business owners are happy to share what they've learned. So I actually talk to a lot of other people in my own niche, and I know what they're doing, and we chat about what's working and what isn't working, and we share that information a lot.
Yeah, that's super helpful.
I don't think it's quite so much as, you know, like, oh, if I'm doing something and it's working, nobody wants to share with anybody else. I think we're kind of past that stage, and most people are fairly happy telling you, like what we're talking about. I'm happy telling people that, you know, writing great content does work.
Yeah, it seems like it. I think, can you give some numbers of how much traffic you're getting? Because maybe someone's like, yeah, maybe this isn't for me. Just give them a monthly number.
Yeah, so we're getting, for one of the sites, it's getting about 500,000 uniques per month. And we have currently, I think, 150 posts on it.
That's incredible. And how long is each post usually?
Usually about 1,000 to 3,000 words. So we do categorize. So the other thing I'd say is when you create content, the easiest way to systematize it is to characterize the types of content you're going to produce. So for us, we have recipes, and they tend to be much shorter. So they might only be about 500 to 700 words long because people want to just get to the recipe. They don't want to read about your whole backstory. But then we have kind of more, you know, here's like 20 paleo cheesecake recipes. Then those posts are going to naturally be longer because you're going to describe what's unique about each recipe or each, you know, which one they should try if they're in the mood for chocolate, which one they should try if they're in the mood for raspberries, which one they should try if they're dairy-free, that kind of thing, then that post is going to be longer and be slightly different. But then you might have articles. So we have typical very long article posts, and those would be just informative. So, you know, what is the paleo diet? And in that case, you would want a much longer article so that you can both rank better and because, you know, those people want to know more. And then you might have articles that are success stories, for example, you know, different types. And by categorizing them, you can actually systematize that particular type of article better. So we have a specific standard operating procedure for writing recipes, and that's going to be different to the article ones.
I think a lot of businesses usually go with the success stories and informative articles. So the informative one, how long would you say that should be? Because the guy at the Traffic and Conversions was like 30,000 words, and I was like, dude, that's a book.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, it's definitely seemed like the longer, the better. And I would say generally the rule these days seems to be about 3,000 words. But having said that, you know, if someone's asked, if your topic is a very, very short, you know, they just want an answer topic, then you should still give the answer at the top of your article, even if you are going to write 3,000 words on it. Because otherwise, you're not really giving people what it is they're looking for. And that's the whole point of Google search.
So you would give the answer right in the beginning, in the first copy, and then you would expand on that whole topic.
Yes. So example would be if they're asking, what is the keto diet or what is the paleo diet, then you would give a very short answer at the top that answers the question, if they were just curious, you know, and they landed on your site, you don't want them to see, to have to wade through, you know, the whole history of cavemen before you get to what is it that you eat now. So you kind of want to answer the question up front, and then if they are interested in learning more, engage them, make it interesting, tell the whole story of, you know, prehistoric man and why it is that the paleo diet still works, and go into everything else that you want to talk about.
How do you find the right places to link out from your articles? Because I know that's super important too. You know, when you show that you're pointing at super high quality articles and websites, Google also thinks that, oh, okay, you're informative, and obviously we should rank you, because I've tried this test and it works.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you know better than me on this point. I haven't run specific tests for this. The general rule we follow is to link out to studies and link out to other very authoritative sites. And if we, it's more of a case of, you know, We want to credit people if we're quoting them, or if we're using their stuff, we're basing anything on what they're doing. So we want to give credit, but at the same time, for the most part, we just cite to studies.
What about the on-page SEO? How much work do you put into that? So the image tags and getting the silo right. Like, I'm just curious how much effort goes into the content and into the actual SEO of the page itself.
So we actually have specific templates that we use to create that formatting structure. In particular, where we have a lot of images, for example, the posts of, you know, 20 paleo cheesecakes, we actually have a specific Google spreadsheet that puts in the correct HTML code automatically.
Okay.
So that we don't, because it's so easy when you are code heavy and you're writing a 3,000 word article with 20 images, or, you know, sometimes it's like 50 images, to miss an easy HTML, like closing a bracket tag or something. And then you can mess up the entirety of your code without even realizing it.
What tools do you use for that?
Literally, we created our own Google Excel spreadsheet.
Got it.
I mean, it was literally hard-coded.
No, I mean, that's great. I just wonder, because, you know, people always ask about, like, what tools can help me with this or that.
Yeah, so we do a quick check. I think there's something called W3 validator, so you can copy. So we always write in the code, the HTML code. We don't use the WordPress editor. And then we copy out that code into the W3 validator, and you can do a quick check just to make sure that you haven't forgotten to close a bracket or something. The other thing we do a quick check of is broken links on the page. So once the post is published, especially since we do link out to other blogs, other sites, you know, just to make sure those links are still valid, that people didn't by accident write it wrong, or sometimes it's easy just to miss out the quotation marks.
That's an interesting point you made. Why do you use this instead of the editor in WordPress?
To control the HTML code, exactly how it looks, how it's formatted. So we've tried really hard to make our site look a lot cleaner, to be very specific with certain, you know, gaps between, for example, we specifically hard coded in the gap between the attribution for the photo and the photo, you know, how much spacing there is.
Right.
And it's just so that it looks cleaner on the page and it's easier for you to actually see everything. Because sometimes the layout, if you just rely on the WordPress editor, it will push too much gap between things.
Yeah, that's the one thing I noticed on the couple of links that you sent me. The site looks super clean. And I was wondering, too, about the design of it. You know, how much effort and how much of the actual Google love comes from the clean design?
I think it's more just over time, I feel like design changes a lot. So over time, we've modified it to look cleaner and cleaner. I still think it could be cleaner still. I've actually been thinking about taking out the sidebar, and I've noticed that's something a lot of other people with big websites have done. So I guess it's more of just an evolving thing as you change. But I'm not a big design person, I have to say. So I just try to keep it simple.
So you have someone on your team doing that?
We change it like every maybe 2 years. So it's not something that we do very often.
Okay. But it does look super clean.
Yeah, and I think actually starting out with a clean design is one of the, it will save you so much hassle because it's just so easy to keep it up that way.
Yeah, why aren't you selling this Excel document?
Honestly, it's like what your needs are for your articles are going to be so different to mine. Because we're so image heavy, it makes a big difference. You know, I don't want the attribution to be as big as like my headline text. And so that makes a big difference. And I want my alt tags to be correct, right?
Yeah, that's true. So I am starting that experiment that you told me to do, which is transcribing the podcast. So far, I've done one through rev.com. And I have some of my workers trying to tackle it, see, you know, which one's going to be better. But it seems like, you know, that's a good starting point. But it's not going to make maybe that much of a difference as if we just do original articles. I don't know. Like, give me your thoughts on that.
So I think one of the easiest ways to get started in the content game is if you already have content and you've got, you know, great podcast episodes already. So by just transcribing it, you start ranking for those terms. Google at least starts seeing you. And then I would just go back and clean up those, you know, transcriptions and make them into better articles. Restructure them, think about the headlines, think about what people are searching for, add in the headings and everything and images. But at the same time, I hate sitting around and doing nothing and just, you know, working on something that's going to take years to finish. So I like putting something out, but then I like going back and making it better. So one of the things we do, we come out with a lot of cookbooks, for example, but we don't just come out with a cookbook and never touch it again. When someone comes back and says, hey, there's a mistake there, we go and correct it. And then every, you know, couple months, we'll add in new recipes, we'll change things, we'll modify it, depending even the design and layout as we discover new ways of doing it. So what I would say is get started with content, but don't think that once you've published something, that has to be it. You can go back and modify and make it better all the time.
Yeah, so this is the funny thing about the starting of the transcriptions. And I've thought about it, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it to only the main podcast episodes, which I think gave the most value. But then at the same time, it's going to be so funny because people will be able to see, this one's got no transcription. It must not be as good once I, you know, get that going.
Well, yeah, maybe you should just do it for all of them.
Like some of the guests will be like, hey, how come
mine doesn't happen?
Yeah,
I know, now I'm going to be curious, Tom. Like, I'm going to look back in a couple of weeks and be like, did you not like my podcast?
That's exactly what I thought, too. And now that I put it out, everyone's going to know. Like, everyone knows it now.
I know, now you just said it.
So I'm kind of forcing my... So, look, I will say this, that I'm putting out a lot of episodes, right? So I thought of doing transcriptions for the ones I started releasing this year, not the ones from 2-3 years ago. You know, maybe I'll get to those at some point. But look, if you're listening to this and I interviewed you 2 years ago, just know this is not the plan at the moment. It's not you. It might be a great episode, but that's not, you know. It's tough, right? Because, you know, doing 60 or 70 transcriptions all like right now and then trying to make those into articles, that's insane. That's a huge, huge battle.
Well, let me ask you, what kind of people, I mean, why do you want content? Why do you want written content on your site? Like, what kind of traffic do you want to bring into your site?
So, see, in the beginning, when I started the podcast, it was mostly of seeing whether I can do it, whether it works at all, and just networking, right? And this is where this whole first and second year thing comes in. And then I started using podcasts as answers to people's questions. So, for example, I had a client ask me yesterday, hey, how long should this article be that you told me to write? Well, I'm going to send them this exact episode right now, right? So I'm using it to answer questions that I get asked a lot. So I do stuff on Facebook Live and content marketing and Facebook ads, all these different topics. And then I'm going to collect them. I'm going to bunch them up like the best 5 episodes on content marketing. And if one of my clients wants to know more, instead of me being on the phone or in emails, you know, exchanging emails, just listen to the episodes. And I think the transcriptions will help a lot because, look, if you don't have time, just skim through these. And then if I follow up on what you said, maybe I'll have shorter, like super, super in-depth articles on the whole, all of the episodes and be like, look, if you just read this, you have the 80-20 of it.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. Well, then it doesn't sound like you're doing it for SEO purposes.
Not as much, but it always, you know, I'm an SEO guy from the beginning. So it's one of these things which, you know, we all want free traffic, right? And with content, mm-hmm. like we always think that too. I know it's going to be there for a client. It's got a different purpose. But what if Google loves it? What if I can get Google to also rank it high? You know what I mean? Like it's in the back of my head all the time.
No, totally. And I guess like for me, it's definitely always thinking about who is going to read this. And if it's your client, then I would just say, make it what your clients want, whether that's bite size, you know, just the key takeaways, or if they prefer getting the full transcript, then the full transcript.
Yeah. So what I thought about doing is initially just have the show notes, then add the transcription, then add a section that says key takeaways. That's exactly what I thought doing in the beginning, right? So Google gets the, you know, the big transcript and they can figure out what they want. But the client, what they really want is that key takeaway. So how long should this article be? Like these just, you know, main points. Because like some of my clients are lawyers and you know, super high professionals and they have no time. I don't think they'll ever listen to the whole podcast. Maybe they'll give it to an assistant. Tell me what he said. You know what I mean? Like that's what I picture.
Yeah, and honestly, people coming from Google will probably want those takeaways too. Like one of the things that I've definitely learned is obviously having content on your site is better than not having content on your site. For example, I'm sure most people have Googled random things before and come onto a forum site. For example, one of the largest forums in our niche is PaleoHacks. I think they get over 1 million hits uniques per month. And this is user-generated content. And it just happens, it's not like going for the major keywords, but it just happens people want to know these questions and you'll get people answering these questions and then you get search traffic because nobody's written an article about it. Nobody's gone out and written 3,000 words to answer that question. But, you know, if you have it on your site, Google will rank it. And when somebody searches for that, there you go. You got free traffic.
So how much?
And in the same way, I mean, with your transcripts, it's the same kind of concept, you know.
It is the same type of concept. What about the meta descriptions? How much effort do you put into those? You know, because it's a little different. Like the few sentences people read when they find you on Google and then the article itself. Do you put the copy from the beginning of the article in there or do you write something completely different?
We write something slightly different, but honestly, I find it's more the how you title it. You're looking for people to click through on a Google search. So if they're searching for paleo cheesecakes, they want to know that that if you have 20 paleo cheesecake recipes that they're there, they want to know that these are delicious. Like what is it that's going to make them click through? That's your goal. And obviously the meta description helps a little bit, but often I find depending on exactly what people are searching for, Google will pull from your own content anyway.
Interesting. What tips do you have for the headlines?
Get a swipe copy of headlines. So anytime you see headlines that you really like, write it down. A lot of people have, you know, their own swipe copy, and we do too. And just go through those and pick the best ones.
I like that. Okay, I know you're short on time, so thank you for coming on, Louise. And where can people find you?
They can find me at, that's a good question. That's a very good question. Can find me, I know, this is probably the toughest question you've asked so far. So they can find me on my own website, louisehendon.com. That's probably the easiest.
That took a while. When's the last time you updated that website?
A really long time ago.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, Louise, thank you again.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the digital architect, Lee Bell. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.